Parshas Matos Maaseh, we're going to speak about what happened with the B'nai Gad and the B'nai Reuven. We're going to talk about their crazy sheep and what happened with all these sheep. Mikna Rav Hayu L'B'nai Reuven U'L'B'nai Gad. Atzu Ma'od, there was a tremendous amount of flocks that Reuven and Gad had. Very many. And they saw the land of the Yazir in Gilad. This is the area outside of Eretz Yisrael on the east side of the Jordan River. And they saw that the area was a perfect place for grazing their animals. So they went up to Moshe Rabbeinu and they said to Moshe Rabbeinu, look, this place looks great. It looks like this is the perfect place for us. So here's where we should live. We're not going into Eretz Yisrael. We're going to stay out here and we're going to take this place for our animals. What in the world were they thinking? This has to be a question. How in the world could B'nai Reuven and B'nai Gad have even imagined that this would be a good idea? Moshe Rabbeinu obviously thought that they were scared and that they didn't want to go fight, right? And they assured Moshe Rabbeinu that wasn't so. No, that's not it. We would fight, but we want to return to this land.
Ephraim.
So not the Ishvatim. So what would it be over here? So that doesn't, but it still doesn't answer our question. What did they find wrong with Eretz Yisrael? Why wouldn't they go into Eretz Yisrael? Now, the fact that the Rishonim don't ask this, that they don't go into it, you don't see a Rashi talking about this, or the Ramban directly, or the Ben Ezra directly, or the Rashbam, or any of the Rishonim bringing up the question, how could they suggest not to live in Eretz Yisrael? Nobody asks it. And even Moshe Rabbeinu was just like, well, what are you going to do? You're not going to fight? I said, no, we'll fight. Then Moshe's like, oh, then it's okay. Then seemingly everything's okay. What's going on here? What was the pshat? So it sounds like, the fact that they don't bring it up, that it seemed to be that they were under a physical desire. They wanted grassland. They were into their cattle and their sheep, and therefore they stayed outside of Eretz Yisrael. Nothing crazy, just simply put, that's what it is. But we have to be melamed zchus on B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven, because it can't be that ridiculous. There's no way that that's the situation, that's the solution to this problem. B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven were simply looking at it like, yeah, that's that. So it's clear they had a question about what they wanted to do. Between Pasuk Hey and Vav, there's a pause. There's a samach right in the middle over there, and if you look in the Sefer Torah, there's a little bit of a pause. It seems like in the middle of their statement, while they're talking, they had a little bit of a question. Wait, is this a good idea for us to ask it or not? They stated in front of Moshe Rabbeinu, hey, check it out. This land is great for grazing. They stopped, and then afterward, they turned and they said, maybe we should get this land. It's clear they did think about it. So what happened over here that made him go? And I thought of this, Rav Hirsch brings it up as well. So Tzedakah came in, the Rabbeinu Bachaya says, no, it was a terribly calculated decision on their part. They made a massive mistake. They were wealthy, they loved their money, and they wanted to stay away from their brothers and live on their own outside of Eretz Yisrael. That's what these guys' plan was. And this is why they were exiled before any of the other Shvatim. 8 years before any of the Shvatim were exiled, they were exiled, B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven and Menasheh, because they had done something that nobody else wanted to do. They were too into their Gashmias. They wanted to do all these things that were with their money itself. And the Das HaKenin goes on three more paragraphs, blasting wealthy people and how they use their money and everything like that. And the Das HaKenin goes on saying that this is crazy. It's crazy that somebody would think this way, that they would be only thinking about their cattle and their sheep and their goats and that's it, and not think about anything else. That's the way the Das HaKenin and the Rabbeinu Bachaya look at it. The Kli Yakar says a hint to this, that throughout the Parsha, you see that Shevet Gad comes before Shevet Reuven. You always see Shevet Gad comes before Reuven. Why? Normally, Reuven would be first, because Reuven was older. But over and in the beginning, you see Reuven and then Gad. In this Pasuk, in Pasuk Aleph, you see Reuven before Gad. But once they got involved in the fight, and Gad saw that Reuven wasn't fighting hard enough, they saw that Reuven was not asking for it the way that they should, that's when B'nai Gad got up and said, no, listen, Moshe Rabbeinu, we really need this land. B'nai Gad were clearly into it, or seemingly from this Pasuk, the way the Kli Yakar saying it, they were into it for their money, and it was a problem that they were only thinking about their money and they weren't thinking about anything else. And this is a Musar Haskil on these Shvatim, on these great people. What are you thinking? Why are you doing this? How could you do it? Rav Victor Miller points out over here, it's a great, great line. Back in the day, Lot had a ton of flocks, and he was with Avram Avinu, and we know what happened. He left Avram Avinu because he said, I need space. I need some space on my own. Esav had a ton of flocks and a ton of people, and he left. He said, Yaakov, I can't be with you, and he left, and he did so. Both of them lost out tremendously by doing so. Had Lot stayed with Avram Avinu, he would have been part of the Jewish people. Had Esav stayed with the Jewish people, if he would have stayed with Yaakov Avinu, he would be part of the Jewish people. And this was the issue with Reuven and Gad. What Moshe Rabbeinu was afraid of is just this. Are they still going to be part of the nation? In fact, here's something that not everybody knows because they don't do Navi, and they're not going to seminary, so they'll never do Navi. So at the end of the day, Reuben and Gad were having a problem. There was an issue. When they left Eretz Yisrael, after they left Eretz Yisrael, and they went out to their lands at the end of Yeshua, they seemed to have built a Mizbeach. And immediately, the people want to start a war against them. And Pinchas gets up and makes peace. He says, wait, why did you build the Mizbeach? They said, oh, we didn't do it as an altar. We did it as a Zecher, as a remembrance that we're still part of Klal Yisrael. But it was already a problem 14 years later. 14 years after they came into Eretz Yisrael. It was already an issue. What's going on with B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuben? They almost died in a civil war because of what happened by leaving that area. Says Rabbi Victor Miller, when a person becomes wealthy, there is a test that is given to see if he remains close with his friends, with his Rabbanim, with his the people that he's close to, or if he moves away to be with other wealthy people. Is he going to stay away from the people that he was with? Now, he wants to get a bigger house. That's understood. Can he build up his house, or does he move away to go somewhere else? That is a hint for everybody to come to Lincolnwood. But which one is it? When they failed this, when they failed it, by wanting to move out, by realizing that they don't belong in Eretz Yisrael anymore, they belonged in Chutz Laaretz, it was terrible for everyone. They went into Galus first, they lost their connection to the people that were living in Eretz Yisrael, and it wasn't the way that it was supposed to be. And even though it wasn't the right thing, Moshe Rabbeinu said, "The makom shadam rotzeh leilech malichan oso." They chose it, they'll get it, but it would have been a better situation had they chosen to be inside. What's going on, Ellie?
How do they know what the aim with their quarrel was going to fall out, and that wasn't going to be enough pasture?
They didn't. They should have had that bitachon. And that leads into the, one of the pieces right afterward. I'll get to that in a second. There was a lack of bitachon on this part. Yes?
Just similar kind of question. What's the point of view of the Israel of conquered lands that are outside of Israel?
That also comes into play, and literally almost right now, the Chassam Sofer and Reb Moshe Feinstein both give nafkaminism what was going on here. In Torah's Moshe, the Chassam Sofer says the Moshe Rabbeinu tested them to see if they would be l'shem shemayim by saying the words va'achar tashuvu. This was an unbelievable nevuah of Moshe Rabbeinu on his part. Va'achar tashuvu, you will all return after you fight in Eretz Yisrael. You're promising. However many people went, I think it was 36,000 people from Reuben and Gad to go fight in Eretz Yisrael. You're promising them to go back. The Achar, and after you do this, Tashuvu, you will return. You're going to return, and you're all going to live. None of you are going to die. And Lamaisa, at the end of the day, that is what happens. No people from Shevet Gad or Shevet Reuben died in the wars in Eretz Yisrael, even though they spent 14 years fighting. Says the Chassam Sofer, it was all a test by Moshe Rabbeinu. If you're doing it L'shem Shamayim, says Moshe Rabbeinu, you're doing it for the right reasons, then you'll be Shluchei Mitzvah, and we know that a Shliach Mitzvah is in an Izokin, and you won't get damaged, and you'll come back, and things will be okay. But if not, then not. If not, then you're not going to be able to do such a thing. That's the concept. And Moshe Rabbeinu told them, make normal, unwalled cities, Arim, and that should be fine. If you make unwalled cities, that shows that you have Emunah and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you're willing to go back, and you know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is on your side. In that case, you're doing a L'shem Shemayim, you will all return. And if not, then not. Chas v'shalom, something might happen. Reb Moshe Feinstein says, the Tanai is part of this. If you do this properly and you go into Eretz Yisrael and you're doing it L'shem Shemayim, you're fighting in order to get the land and you really want this land, then the land becomes Kadosh and it becomes a part of Eretz Yisrael. See, this might lead us to another answer. But with all these answers up, they're looking at their money. Moshe Rabbeinu said to them, I'll give you a Tanai. You do this correctly, then you will go back and you'll make it Eretz Yisrael. But if you don't do it correctly, then you're not going back, and we lose this Avra Yardin forever. This land on the other side of the Jordan River is lost forever. It's no longer going to be part of Eretz Yisrael. It's not going to be Kadosh. It doesn't have the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. The Nafkamin is obvious. Are you Chayiv in Truma, Meiser, Shemitah, in the land of Gad, Reuben, and Chatzi Shevet Menashe, on the other side of the Jordan River, while they were living there? Nowadays, there's no question you're Pater, because they did not capture it when they came back by the times of Ezra Sofer. That land is not. There is no Kedusha Sa'aretz that applies to that land. But at the time, was there Kedusha Sa'aretz? Moshe Rabbeinu said, it's up to you guys. If you do it in the right way, there will be. And if not, not. Now, Rosh Sternbach said there was a huge lack of Amunah on their part. This lack of Amunah of, they assumed, and Ellie, really, this is what you were asking. It's They thought they're not going to have enough pasture land in Eretz Yisrael. They thought that they have to take it into their own hands and do something on their own to get themselves enough pasture land for their flocks itself. And in that sense, says Rosh Sternbach, that was their problem. They realized that this land was awesome. They didn't think there'd be enough in Eretz Yisrael, and that lack of emuna was such an issue, it was a punishment on their part. And again, and this is knocking them down. But they got any room or two into their money, or they didn't have enough emuna to do this correctly. The Be'er Yosef has a whole long piece over here, and the truth is, I'm putting it all in one paragraph when it's about six pages altogether. The Be'er Yosef talks about this. But what he says is that it seems so silly what B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven were doing. So into their money? What does that mean, they're so into their money? They're leaving their wives and kids in an unprotected land while they go fight in Eretz Yisrael. That's crazy. Why would they do that? That's a silly thing to do. You just destroyed these nations. You know there are people who want to take revenge against you. You know there are people that are going to be fighting. Why would you leave your kids out there in chutzlars? What are you thinking by doing such a thing? See, that really goes the opposite way, right? Because clearly they believed that a Kadosh Baruch Hu was going to take care of them. But on the other hand, they didn't believe that they would have good enough land in Eretz Yisrael. We need to take it into our own hands to do something right now. So it's almost like paradoxical or hypocritical on their part. That we know we have Amunah, but at the same point, it's not there. This is the issue. And here's the issue that they went through. And the Be'er Yosef says this beautifully, absolutely beautifully. They saw Sihon and Og, and they saw the wars and what had happened. Sihon and Og were these huge giants, massive giants, powerful people with everything they had. And B'nai Yisrael destroyed them without losing a single person in battle. According to the Medrash, the war against Sihon happened in Elul, and the war against Og happened in Tishrei on Sukkot. You know, the Rokeach says one of the reasons why you sit in a sukkah on the reason, the Rokeach says, you sit in a sukkah on that time, during that time, why we go in there, is because of the sukkos that they made during the war against Og. That's why you're sitting in a sukkah. Not because the Anani HaKavod or the Sukkos Mamash. Says the Rokeach, it's both. The Anani HaKavod extended for their Sukkos Mamash when they fought in the war against Og. That's what he says. So they fought that war against Og, and it was miraculous. Og was throwing things at them, these huge blisteroids, these huge missiles at them, and they weren't being hit. They weren't hit. It kind of reminds you of what's happening in Eretz Yisrael over the last 15 years, 20, 50 years. It's amazing. Each time Og threw something, it missed, or it went in the wrong direction, or it didn't hit anything. It was amazing what they were seeing. So B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven turned to Moshe Rabbeinu and said, if that's what the war is like outside of Eretz Yisrael, you can imagine what it's going to be like when we go to Eretz Yisrael. So they went to Moshe Rabbeinu and they said, it's clear to us that this is the beginning of our wars of taking over Eretz Yisrael. And if it's the beginning of the wars of taking over Eretz Yisrael, that means this area is still it's relegated as Eretz Yisrael territory. B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven, it's got to be. Such miracles happened over here. So we have such an unbelievable idea over here. What we saw right over here is that those cities are intact. Sihon and Og came out to us in the fields. We didn't fight them in their cities. They came out to us in the fields. That means that their cities are already protected, walled cities. If we send our wives and children in there, said B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven, we've already started winning the war. We know it's only going to get more miraculous from here, and we have protected cities for our wives and children. We don't have to worry about anything. The only thing we have to worry about is corrals for our sheep and goats, because they don't have ready-made corrals for sheep and goats. They said, let's leave our wives and children in the cities. We'll take our sheep and we'll put them around, right? And that should be good enough. We should be perfectly fine. We won't have any issues. And everything will be perfectly fine when we're there, because the miracles that will happen for us, then everything will be good. To which Moshe Rabbeinu responded and said, you guys don't get it. These cities are saturated. They're infested with Tuma and Avodah Zarah and the most disgusting stuff in the world. If you send your wives and kids in there, the ones who are the most influenced, the ones who are going to be sitting there for 14 years without a father figure in the house, those kids are going to get destroyed. They're going to get ruined from the Tuma that's in these households. You have to rebuild, rename, and redo all the structures before you go and you fight with us in Eretz Yisrael. And that was the discussion. The discussion was not, should you be fighting, should you not be fighting. That was all going to happen, and B'nai Gad and Reuben understood that. The question is, should we redo the cities before we start? That's what the Bar Yosef says. So much more when it comes to this, but I'm just putting them together. We're skipping the Or HaChaim HaKadosh for right now. The Shari Aaron said another reason why they wanted to be in Eretz Yisrael, why they wanted to be outside of Eretz Yisrael. So we had they're being blamed. Now we're going to start going into the Melamed Tzchus. Melamed Tzchus for B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven, they knew this is the land that Moshe Rabbeinu was going to be buried. They knew Moshe Rabbeinu was going to die. They knew Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't going to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. Since they knew that, B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven came up and they said, Moshe, Rebbe, we want to be near you. Wherever you're buried, we don't want it to be a non-Jewish land. We want it to be our land. So we're surrounded by your kever. We want to be around your kever. When we need help, we'll go to your kever and we'll daven to a Kaddish Baruch Hu, through the schus of you, you should answer us. That's what we want. There were Hasidim. Chassidim to Moshe Rabbeinu, these people, B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuben. And they wanted to be around as much as they possibly could. Reuben also, even though it really was in Shevet Gad that Moshe Rabbeinu was buried, the Gemara in Sotah Daf Yud Gimel says that Reuben also, the land around Gad, was also, that Reuben was around that area for Moshe Rabbeinu. He died in that area and then was moved to Shevet Gad, whatever happened. That Reuben and Gad said, we want to be near you. We want to be near you. But the problem was they couldn't ask for it directly. Because they thought it wasn't Derech Eretz to say, when you die, we want to be near your body. He wasn't dead yet. So because he wasn't dead yet, they made an excuse. And their excuse was, we need pasture land for our sheep and our goats. That wasn't the real reason. The real reason was to be near Moshe Rabbeinu even after death. But their excuse was, we have a lot of sheep and this happens to be over here, and that's that. That's why, if you look at it, it makes no sense. Do you notice how what they asked for? They asked for land for grazing, so that their animals could graze, right? And then what happened right after that? They said, we want these 9 cities. Ataros, Vedivon, Vyazer, and they go through cities. Why would you want cities if you want pasture land? You should ask for more pasture land. You want the farmlands. You don't want the cities. What are they asking for? The pshat is they were trying to hint to Moshe Rabbeinu. We want land for our cattle and sheep. Wink, wink, wink. And Moshe Rabbeinu is like, I think I get what you're trying to get at, and that you want to be near me, and you just don't want to say it out of Derech Eretz. But still you have to fight with Klal Yisrael, to which they admitted, yes, we'll fight for Klal Yisrael, but we still want to be near you, and that's that. The Chassam Sofer says, the exact same thing. They wanted to be, they knew Moshe Rabbeinu was going to be buried there. They wanted to be close to the Rebbe itself. And they knew, along with that, we also get Schar Psios. You know, there's a mitzvah to walk a little bit further to Shul. Right, when you're walking to Shul on a Shabbos or whatever it is, you get Schar Psios. You get Schar for every step you take when you go to Shul. So every step you take that's a little bit extra is a little bit more, so you get that Schar for walking to Shul. So you moved outside, right, so you could walk even further to be able to get here, which makes sense, right? So I am killing all of you right now, destroying all of you. It's time. I think it's time. If you just want to work on Schar Psios, I'm just saying. Psalm Sofer says you should work on it. So that's perfect. That's absolutely perfect to be able to do right here. And that's what Gad and Reuven did. Gad and Reuven thought to themselves, if only we could daven in Lincolnwood. If only we could. Well, we could do that if we live outside of Eretz Yisrael and walk in. And they used both to Moshe Rabbeinu. They said to Moshe Rabbeinu, we want to be close to our Rebbe, and we get Schar Psios. And the double whammy said that's what they want to do. Rebbunim Mipshischa. If you've heard a story from Rebbunim Mipshischa, they're all about his love for other Yidden. Says that's the pshat on Mikne Rav. Now we think that Mikne Rav is a lot of cattle and a lot of sheep and a lot of goats, right? Mikne Rav means they had a kinyan on their Rebbe. They had a kinyan on the Rebbe. They were so connected with the Rebbe Moshe Rabbeinu, they couldn't stop. That's what Rebbunim says. The Sfatam it says in Tuf Resh Mem, in your Tuf Resh Mem. This means that they wanted Moshe Rabbeinu to give them their chelek in Eretz Yisrael. They mamish wanted Moshe Rabbeinu to give it himself. They wanted Moshe Rabbeinu to do it. If they waited to go into the land, then Yoshua would give it to them. So they wanted Moshe Rabbeinu to say something right then. You know what they really were asking for, but they didn't get? They were saying to Moshe Rabbeinu, we want to live in this land right now. To which Moshe Rabbeinu would say, what do you mean? You get a chelek in Eretz Yisrael. Then Rebbe, give us a chelek in Eretz Yisrael right now. That's what they were waiting for. They were waiting for the one answer. The answer of Moshe Rabbeinu was, oh, I'll take care of it for you. I'll do it for you. And they had that Kinyan Rav that they really wanted to go through. And not only that, the Chiddush Arum says this, the Pardi Yosef quotes it as well. That was their plan. If they take this portion of land, and they're able to live there. That means they're extending the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael to outside of Eretz Yisrael, right? If that land that they're living in is in Eretz Yisrael right then, what does that mean about Moshe Rabbeinu? That means Moshe Rabbeinu is in Eretz Yisrael already. And if he's in Eretz Yisrael, then he can go to the real Eretz Yisrael. So Gad and Reuven had this connection with the Rebbe. They wanted to be around the Rebbe. And not only that, they thought that this might be able to keep the Rebbe alive if they keep doing this. That was their Mikna Rav to be able to go through. That was their plan of going through over here. So as Moshe says, it wasn't on purpose. But regardless, it's the idea of what they wanted to do over here, and that's that. Okay, on the other hand. Yeah?
Why did the institution have such a strong connection with Moshe?
Why wouldn't Shivat Levi have had it more than anybody else, or Shivat Yehuda, or anybody else who was connected to Moshe Rabbeinu in that way? Reuven is known as a Baal Tshuva. And a Baal Tshuva, I don't know if anybody here is a Baal Tshuva, we all know, sometimes go to a little bit of an extreme. And for that reason, Reuven was always connected to Moshe Rabbeinu more than anyone else. They found themselves, and the Shevet Reuven had this propensity to be closer to the Rebbe than anybody else was, to try to move themselves closer and closer and closer. Shevet Gad is an interesting one. They were powerful people who were led in war. They were Twilt Zroa Atkakod. They tore off, when they used their sword, they would tear off an arm and a head all at once. They would do one big slice and tear off one arm and one head out of the two, right, all at once whenever they would fight. That was their connection, that they needed a general, someone in charge of them, somebody to tell them what to do, that they were those army people. So although there were other people who also had a connection in some way, says the Chidah, their connection to Moshe Rabbeinu was because of their jobs and who they were. Reuven, I get a little bit better, because Baal Tshuva, I definitely can see that by. I can't really see it as much by the army, because Moshe Rabbeinu didn't exactly take them out to war, but that's the idea that he says between those two. Yeah.
And then the last question, sorry about this. And it also says in the Torah that no one knows where Moshe's buried.
Yeah.
Then they realize that at that point that they made a really, really big mistake. The reason they're saying why.
That's exactly what the Chassam Sofer says, because they started saying we want to be near the Kever of Moshe Rabbeinu. They never said it out loud, etc. HaKadosh Baruch Hu hid the Kever of Moshe Rabbeinu so that no one would know where it is, so that they wouldn't use it as like a skula place, and people would leave Eretz Yisrael in order to go to the Kever of Moshe Rabbeinu, like Gad and Reuven did. You're right. That was part of their mistake. They had that tremendous kinyan. This is our Malamid Skus on B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven. But in the end, it was the wrong thing to do. And that's why it was hidden on purpose. Yeah, Noah.
Now,
Kadosh Baruch Hu couldn't want that.
I understand not letting him enter while he's alive. And once he was already... Yes,
couldn't let it. Because he was married to the wife of Cush. Even though he never consummated the marriage. That was the halacha that's brought down in the Yalkut Reuveni. Could not happen. Even his body could not be buried. The kasha is why Miriam wasn't buried in Eretz Yisrael. Aaron and Moshe, right, we can somewhat understand, because that's actually brought down in Pesukim, why they weren't buried in Eretz Yisrael. Why Miriam wasn't is a Shaila. But yes, Jake.
Why can't we just say, because they don't know where it is, they can know what land it's in. The land is a huge place, not like the land is like a small patch. It could be, they know the land, they don't know where. It could be anywhere.
Yeah, and that's the idea. That at the end of the day, at least he's somewhere within our area. That's what their consolation prize was. Well, at least he's in the land over anything else, but it's not anything more than that. They didn't get anything more than that. Yes, Ellie.
So then why is it that Reuben and God is coming forward, and then Moshe is the one that says, okay, half of Menashe is going to come with him?
The Chatzis Shiva Menashe is a big issue in and of itself. Then it says they were sent there to be the teachers for Gad and Reuven. There's Rav Wolfson that has about 5 pages on it. And the simple answer is that Chatzis Shiva Menashe looked at it and said, this is a big land for ourselves. If you notice, Reuven and Gad and Shimon are from the same Degel. You would have thought that Shimon should go out of that land, right? There's a lot of Shilas Belai Menashe went through, but that's a story for another time. And Joel, what's up?
So Reuven and Gad made that area Kadosh, that when Moshe died, he would be in the land of Eretz Yisrael.
That was their plan, part of their plan. The Kedusha Rim said that was their plan. But and that way he'd be in Eretz Yisrael, and that would be good.
If you're saying through the Chassam Sofer that he can't ever be in the land of Eretz Yisrael, then like, how does that work that they can ever make a Kadosh?
Well, that was their plan. They didn't know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was going to say Rav Lach to Moshe Rabbeinu. They thought there was a way of getting out of it. So this was their tefillah. This was their opportunity, so to speak, to save the Rebbe and to be able to make the Rebbe be able to go into Eretz Yisrael. It failed. It failed.
Okay.
But nonetheless, that was their ability.
So one last thing. So if the whole reason he needs to go into Eretz Yisrael is because he gets the rock, then...
That's not the only reason. Okay. The real reason they didn't go into Eretz, he didn't go into Eretz Yisrael is because he argued with Moshe Rabbeinu.
What?
The real reason he didn't go in is because he argued with HaKadosh Baruch Hu at the Sinai. That's the real reason why he didn't go into Eretz Yisrael. That goes all the way back. At that moment, he said, Aaron is going to be there, he's going to be the Mavio, and that already hints to it. There's six reasons why Moshe Rabbeinu didn't go into Eretz Yisrael. That was what the Mei Meriba was the public one. But there were five other private reasons why Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't go into Eretz Yisrael.
That was before he was even Moshe, though.
Mm-hmm. He's Moshe. Yeah. He stole his name. Just not the person that we know. On the other hand, you have another shot over here brought by the Chidah from the Ramami Pano that these three Shvatim, Reuven, Gad, and Menashe, all had a bit of a begam in their births. It was something that wasn't their fault. And they weren't Zocha to go to Eretz Yisrael. And says the Chidah, Hashem put this in their heads so that they wouldn't go into Eretz Yisrael. Listen, it's a crazy shot. It's not that they did something wrong, whatever it is. It's a Kadosh Baruch Hu sort of influenced them, and I know Bechira, but influenced them to ask for land outside of Eretz Yisrael in order to get them out because they had a pagam with them. Now, what was the pagam? Reuven, we know. Reuven was an issue because when Yaakov was together with Leah, he thought she was Rachel. That's called a possible ben tamura. That's already a shaila of itself, and although the Gemara says it's not a ben tamura and it goes through the Yaakov, you know, had no, he had stam das, he didn't have any das for anyone specifically. Nonetheless, Reuven was out. That was questionable from there. Menashe was the firstborn of Osnas. And Osnas was the child of either Potiphar and Ishes Potiphar, or between Dina and Shechem. And because she came from some type of lineage which wasn't so good, then Menashe also had a pagam in his lineage and didn't deserve to be in Eretz Yisrael, which is crazy. And then he says, and Gad was the firstborn of Zilpah, and Leah never asked permission for Zilpah to marry Yaakovinu. It was done in private without anyone knowing about it, and therefore Gad, who was the firstborn of Zilpah, was also a bit of a pagam. Now that, the Chidah immediately says, that is not written anywhere. The Ramami Pano says it, that Zilpah was taken in without Yaakov's knowledge beforehand, which is crazy talk. That's unbelievable. But the Ramami Pano says it, and the Chidah questions it. Either way, Hashem put it in their heads to ask for this so that they wouldn't be able to be in Eretz Yisrael, which is such a crazy idea. It's literally what such a crazy idea over here.
Why
would? He said firstborn. It specifically meant the firstborn from there. I guess eventually they did tshuva or something like that. But they said that the line is they were the firstborn when it came to that. So you're right. I mean, technically you should go into Asher and Ephraim and everybody else there, right? That would be an issue. What's up, Ruby?
But they were led into Eretz Yisrael afterwards, and Ezra and Zophar came and Gad took
over. Look at this guy. That's pretty good. See, his name is Reuven, so, you know, he has to stick up for his own tribe. I definitely hear that. Yes, he wasn't Zilcha to get the original Chalukah in Eretz Yisrael. That's the line from the Chidah over here, and that's the idea. Then you go into a whole other direction. So we got our fourth direction right now. Our fourth direction is this Farish Shlomo, the Radamsker. This is Chassidus HaTorah to the max. This is being so Melamed Tzchus on B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven, we're going to turn them into the greatest tzaddikim of all time. That's where we're going to go to right now. He says they were trying to bring the Geula. They wanted the full Geula and be attacking the world by being staying outside, being in Gullus, grabbing the sparks of Kedusha that are lost to us, that are thrown into Gullus. They would be the people inside and bring it back to Klal Yisrael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they said, Anachnu Nechaleitz Chushim. We will go in ready to go to fight this war. Chushim is the letters of Mashiach, says the Tzvar Shlomo. They said, we're not going home until we finish the job that we set out to do to bring Mashiach. They said, we want to have the Geula, we're going to stay out here, we're not going home until we finish it up. That's what they were saying over here, which is a crazy pshat in Sfar Shlomo. And Rib Wolfson puts together a bunch of ideas. Now here it gets a little crazy. He says, Avraham was promised that his children will inherit 10 nations altogether. We all know the seven Emeritz Canaan, the Canaani, the Perizi, Amori, Girgashi, Yevusi, Chiti, Chivi. That we know. We've heard of those seven, they're all there. But there were three other nations that he was promised. Cani, Kenizi, and Kadmoni. Now Rashi says Cani, Kenizi, and Kadmoni is Moab, Ammon, and Edom. He was promised those three. But we didn't get those three. Those three are going to remain for after the Geula Shleima. When Mashiach comes, then the Keni, Knizi, and Kadmoni are going to come back to us. What these two are doing, now let's go another introduction. We all know that before Mashiach comes, there's going to be a herald. Eliyahu HaNavi is going to get up and he's going to be the Mavatzer. He's going to get up and say, Mashiach is coming. We all know that. We all know Eliyahu HaNavi is supposed to come before. He's going to preface Mashiach, and it's going to come. So it's not a coincidence. When Gud, Eliyahu HaNavi, is related to Shevet Gud, the Targum Yonasan Nuzil says by the words Ba Gud when he was born, that Eliyahu HaNavi has a shaychus to Shevet Gud, whether he's from Shevet Gud, if he's not Pinchas, I guess, or there's an Eshama that's connected, Gud felt that they were the Mevaser Tov for Klal Yisrael, that they were going to be the Eliyahu HaNavi bringing in Mashiach to all of Klal Yisrael, that they were going to gather everybody in. So what they said was, instead of the seven nations that we're going to conquer, let's do nine nations that we're going to conquer. That's why they asked for nine cities altogether. Edom will be at the very end. We'll be Eliyahu HaNavi. We'll bring in these two. We'll make nine countries. We'll take the Keni and the Kenizi. And the Mashiach will come and do Kadmoni. And their idea was that Moshe Rabbeinu will be Mashiach. Moshe Rabbeinu will come into Eretz Yisrael. Then if we take over this, we'll start the Geula Shleima. He'll be the Mashiach. Everything's going to work out well. They mamish wanted to bring Mashiach at that moment itself. It's amazing, because if you look at the bracha of Moshe Rabbeinu, it's almost exactly this. The bracha that Moshe Rabbeinu gives to Shevet Gad, in Vizosa Bracha and Parzosa Bracha, is almost these exact words. The words that he uses to describe Shevet Gad is that they have a connection to me, they wanted to bring me in. It's a crazy word that you can translate to this entire idea to be able to go through. That's the concept of what's going on over here. But then you have to ask, so where did they get all these flocks from? What happened that gave them all these flocks? Granted, we can somewhat be Melamed Tzchus for them in some way, shape, or form, but where did they get all these sheep and goats from? Why did they have more than anybody else? The Or HaChaim HaKadosh says they were the strongest Shevet at war. Reuben and Gad were the strongest at war, and therefore they got more plunder than everybody else. Sfat Samus and Likutim says, I don't understand why that's so. Why in the world would they have been stronger than any other nation? Why would Gad and Reuben get more than anybody else? You'd think also that you divide spoils equally. Who in the world does more spoils than anybody? Why would you do that? You'd think that everybody divides up equally when it came to this. Thoreau Kaff said they had a great business sense. They were very well into cattle and sheep and goats and everything. They were into that stuff, and they had more sense than everybody else. They were able to do what the other Shvatim couldn't do. The Baalei Tosfos said they got most of the riches from Midian. Only from that war at Midian, that's where they got everything from, and that was very recent, which is why they brought it up over here. The Al Kuruvini quotes that from a Psikta. There are those that say that Gad had more than Reuben, that Gad was more than that, but now you get into some crazy answers. Reuben was known as an Ish Sada. Ish Sada, a man of the fields, and looked around other fields, he was able to tell what was good pasture. He was a farmhand already. It's interesting because we know one thing about Reuben when he was a kid. When he was a child, we know that he found the Dudayim. And he took those Dudayim and he brought them back for his mother, Leah, right? And he gave them over to Rachel. So now they're taking it to another extreme. What were the Dudayim known for? What were the Dudayim known for, these mandrakes? So childbirth, to make the mother give birth, right? Reuven used them for his sheep and caused his sheep to propagate more than any other animals had. And he gave them Pur Revu by giving them these Dudayim. It's a crazy pshat, but he caused that to happen one after the other after the other. Other Shvatim, right, they didn't know what Reuben was doing, so they didn't get involved with stuff like that. And then there's Gad. What about Gad? So it's funny. The Mun was called Zera Gad. It was the seed of coriander. It looked like the seed of coriander. I have no idea what coriander is. I don't know what the seed looks like. I don't know. It looks like mun. It's what? Well, I know it's a spice. Yeah, I bought it once. But I have no idea what it really looks like. Apparently, it's a white fluffy ball, because that's what the mun looked like, right? So apparently, that's what the seed of coriander is supposed to look like. Shevet Gad never ate meat. because they loved the Mun so much. That's why their name is hinted to. It was Zeragut from the Mun. They were so into the Mun, they didn't eat any of their flocks of sheep and goats. The other parts of Klal Yisrael, they ate their sheep and goats. So they had a lot of sheep and goats, but they didn't have so much because they ate a lot of it. Shevet Gad would never eat their sheep and goats. They ended up having more than everybody else. So Reuben, why did he have so many flocks? Because in Ish Sadeh, he knew where the Judaim were. He was able to find things that nobody else knew, and he was able to make his sheep give birth more than any other animals were able to do so. That was Reuben. And Gad, why was Gad so? Because he never ate any of his animals, because he always ate the Mun, and he was perfectly fine with the Mun itself. He never had any problem with it whatsoever. The Shach says that the Rebbe Yonason Eifshitz goes into this. That's the Rebbeinu Ephraim as well. They all go into this idea, that concept of where it was. Shimon was in their degel, and they wanted Shimon involved also, and they were going to give him the secrets of how to have so many animals. And when Shimon kept sinning and doing things that were wrong, they disincluded him from their fraternity. So the sheep growing fraternity that Reuben and Gad were in, Shimon was left out, and therefore Shimon did not stay outside of Eretz Yisrael. Instead, they had something around Yehuda itself. And then I get the last one. If you can see the picture on these sheep, this is probably the best picture I have ever seen in my life. I've never seen a picture like this. Absolutely not. The Kliyaker says there's a total different idea. You know, I just read that llamas are used in South America as guard dogs for a lot of the sheep. Why? Because they're big, they're mean, they spit, and if you get them upset, they will chase after you and bite you. That's what llamas will do. So they use llamas as guard dogs in South America. They train them to be guard dogs that go around. Says the Kliyaker, Gad and Reuven didn't just have sheep, didn't just have goats, didn't just have cattle. They trained their sheep, goats, and cattle to be guard dogs. And they made them into dangerous sheep and dangerous goats. That they used them as guard dogs. They trained them to do this. Then when they would go up, there is nothing scarier than a sheep that wants to kill you. Absolutely nothing scarier than that. And in Makas Aruv, when the wild animals came against the Mitzrayim, one of the parts of Makas Aruv was this. According to the Medrash HaGadol, it was domestic animals that went up to the Mitzrayim as the Mitzrayim were like, oh, phew, Fido, we're okay now. And then the animals, their domestic animals, their pets started biting them to death. That was the Pella of Makas Aruv, because there's nothing scarier than a cow. Have you ever looked at a cow? There is nothing scary. He looks like he's all cool. He's chewing on his gum, right? And he's staring you down with those huge eyes that don't look normal whatsoever. I can very well believe that guy's going to eat me. I have no problem believing that. They had sheep, says the Kliyaker, that Mamish did that. They were dangerous sheep. In Eov, Perek Aleph Pasuk Yud, says Rashi, Eov's sheep were different from every other sheep because these sheep ate wolves. They chased after wolves and killed them. Says the Kliyaker, that applies over here as well. In the Gemara in Tainis Chof Gimel, it says that Rabbi Hanina ben Dosa had goats that brought back bears on their horns. That when they went out in the field, he said if they ever stole anything from anybody, they should come back and they should have bears on their horns. And they came back with Syrian brown bears on their horns, coming back. He had trained them to be able to be dangerous, and so too with Gad and Reuven. The reason why they were so into their cattle and their sheep and their goats, etc., is they said these are the perfect guards for Klal Yisrael. They will be on the outskirts of Eretz Yisrael. They will sit there, and if any enemies come in, they're never going to be afraid. They're not going to think anything of the sheep. But the sheep is going to have an Uzi. And that sheep with an Uzi is going to destroy anyone who comes in. It's going to be a guard sheep. And they were saying to Moshe, this is why we want to be outside. We know how to do this. We can have the money outside here. That's why they said they wanted that more than the cities for their children. They thought that this was exactly it. And Moshe said, no. You have to have more bitachon that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was going to do everything, not the sheep. Not the sheep and goats. And they had to have more bitachon that that was going to be over there. So we're going to end with this. If they truly had a good answer as to what they were doing, whether it's one of the four answers, whether the answer of Mashiach, whether there was a begam that wasn't even their fault, whatever it was, why did they take Moshe Rabbeinu's abuse? Moshe Rabbeinu was yelling at them for almost five psukim, telling them, guys, let me tell you a bit of history. Do you know what the Meraglim did? He started screaming at them for what they had done wrong. Well, why didn't they just say, Moshe Rabbeinu, we have good svaras here. Let's explain what our good svaras are. Why didn't they say something to Moshe Rabbeinu? Why didn't they explain themselves? What's Pshat? such an unbelievable answer. The Sfat Emes, one time, was sitting up with his chavrusa. They were learning late, hit him in his chavrusa. And they went all the way up until basically the morning to figure out a sugya, and they finally figured out the sugya, whatever, 4, 5, 6 o'clock in the morning. The next morning, they slept in late. They slept in for shacharis. They didn't make it to shacharis. So the Kedusha Rim, the Sfat Emes' grandfather and his Rebbe, took him in front of the entire shul when he got in, took him in front of everybody there, the whole yeshiva, and started screaming at him, laying into him for missing shacharis. For a whole hour, the Kedusha Rim was yelling at him. And it was strange, because number one, the Kedusha Rim was not the type of person to scream. Number two, the Kedusha Rim was a Kupsker. He was a student of the Kupsker Rebbe. Kupsker Rebbe never said a word. If you get a Dvar Torah from the Kupsker Rebbe that's more than a line, I'll give you a dollar. Kutzker Rebbe never said anything. That's why, if you notice, the Sfas Emes is so short. Because the Sfas Emes is a Talmud of the Kedusha Rim. Kedusha Rim barely writes anything. You have a one-liner from the Kedusha Rim, maybe two lines from the Kedusha Rim. So the Kutzker was a one-liner. The Kedusha Rim was a two-liner. And the Sfas Emes is a paragraph. Oh, you read it to Doris. Right, of going down. It's unbelievable. The Imre Emes will have an essay. The Imre Emes will have a little bit longer. The Imre Emes will go a little bit further. But it's amazing that he got it. So he was yelling for 1 hour. So the other book, the one that the Sfas Emes was learning with, after the Kedusha Rim finished, so he turned to the Sfas Emes and said, why didn't you just tell him that you were learning all night? Why didn't you tell him that? He thinks you're lazy and you just slept in. He didn't sleep in. You were learning all night. That's the reason why you missed chakras. Sfas Emes turned to him and he said, you think I was going to lose out on an hour of hearing my grandfather speak? There were pearls of wisdom coming from my grandfather's mouth. Every bit that he just said was another Torah. I wanted to hear what my grandfather would tell me when I missed Shacharis. It was worth it. It was worth it. Well, why would I interrupt him? And he brought a raya. He said, B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuben were standing here, and they were getting yelled at by Moshe Rabbeinu. And the whole time, they were standing there saying, No, don't worry, we're going to fight the war. Why didn't they just say that in the first place? We know we're going to fight, but we want this land for X, Y, and Z. Why didn't they just say that? The answer is, they wanted to talk to Moshe Rabbeinu. They wanted to hear his words. Who gets Moshe Rabbeinu to speak to them? Even if he's yelling at you, that's awesome. Moshe Rabbeinu is speaking to us. Said the Sfas Emes, if B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven did it to hear the words of Moshe Rabbeinu, then I'm going to do it to hear the words of the Kedusha Rim. That's the idea of why they kept it going, allowing themselves to hear it from him, to hear what was going to be over there. All right, guys, we'll stop with that. Have a great Shabbos.